One mass is warm, while the other is cold. The warmer air rises, and the cooler air falls. Likewise, the low-pressure area slides down the sides of the high-pressure area. They swirl in and around one another, creating the beginnings of the storm. In this footage, taken from U.S. Navy Weather Patrol aircraft, we can clearly observe the two masses, one high pressure and one low pressure, coming in contact with one another. The result is a surging storm of tremendous strength that strikes with forceful determination.
Welcome to Trilogy in Theory. My name is Webb, and this is my co-host Mike, and we are wrapping up our month with the 1999 cult classic, The Virgin Suicides. And by the way, I think the term cult classic has lost all meaning. It's getting to the point where it is... at first it was funny, but now I get mad every time it's brought up. But here we go. Let's talk about... This is the second Sofia Coppola film I've seen, the other one obviously being Lost in Translation, which I didn't like. Virgin Suicide. Now, here's the thing, Mike.
Hater of women. Here we go. Introducing himself as a menace to film Twitter.
I'm not saying that this film is bad.
Boring?
At times, but here's the thing. Even let's leave boring aside. I don't think it's boring. But it's not for me, all right? But here's the thing. I don't know who it's for. I think that's my biggest problem with it. Is like, I don't know who it's for. If it's Sofia Coppola has said in the behind the scenes stuff, and I think one of the retrospectives on the Criterion disc, she says that like I wanted it to be, well, she wanted to make an art movie. She wanted to make an art movie about young girls that really spoke to them. But is this movie for young girls? You know, the problems these girls have aren't universal, because all of their issues stem from their overly religious parents, maybe mother specifically, and spineless father. But for the most part, that is a very specific issue to have. Case in point, like, you know, the argument against this film is seventh grade, and it features a girl who could stand in as any girl. I think in America, or even boy, really, to be honest with you, that's how universal seventh grade is.
Are you talking about eighth grade? The Bo Burnham?
Yes. Seventh grade.
Eighth grade, she was too cool. That's the mistake of Bo, is the seventh grade was where it was at. He was off by a year.
Excuse me. Eighth grade is a completely universal film that I think anybody of that age can enjoy. So... I don't understand. So, what did you think about The Virgin Suicides? This was my first watch. Clearly negative.
So, I watched it when I was a teenager, and I probably had the reaction of the John Cusack character from High Fidelity, which I think is a movie I relentlessly try to get you to watch because it's pretty much about a character like you, and you refuse to do so. He's applying pop culture, I believe, in this particular moment, books that he's read. He's saying that he's read these books, so he should be able to date the modern woman because he's read books and he got them. He understood what they're about. And he's like, and he looks at the camera and says, they're about girls, right? And I feel that's what this film, like, when I was a teenager, I was like, well, it's about chicks, but I don't really understand it, but it's okay because the teenage boys across the street, they also don't seem to understand it. They seem perplexed, intrigued, and I am as well. So I was into it, but I felt as a teenager like grown Webb, where I was like, maybe it's not for me. I don't know. I don't know who's this for, but I had the impression that the people that were going to dig it were really going to dig it. Like there was some hip crowd out there that was really going to get into this. My experience, you know, small town Kentucky. So, you know, take that for what's worth. There was no teenage girl talking about the virgin suicides. That was not, they were talking about 10 things I hate about you. They were not talking about the virgin suicides, but if Ms. Coppola was intending to make an art film, then sure, this is going to have an audience. I think primarily of adults who wish that they had this material available to them when they were a teenager, but that maybe rose colored glasses, because when they were a teenager, they would want to see Heath Ledger sing to them. And not Josh Hartnett with a horrible wig. I'm speculating, but that's been my experience, I guess, up to this point.
How do you market a film like that? Like, this is for people past their age looking back at a time. This is for the people who wish they had this kind of a movie 10 years ago. Like, how do you...
Yeah, yeah.
That's really difficult. Now, there are good things in it. I think that... I don't want to call it the heart of the film, but... When I was at my most invested was the relationship between Lux and Tripp Fontaine, right?
Oh, because Tripp is a dead ringer for what I assume your high school days were like. There's a moment where he's lounging in his pool in like a Speedo, which if he had dunked his head in the water, it would have killed him because the wig would have weighed him down. But I imagine, I even took a picture of my screen and meant to send it to you. Like, was this you in high school? Is this what your high school experience was like?
I was pretty much Michael Kelso. That's my, not at all. So there's a lot of little things, like their moment in the movie theater, right, where their hands are almost touching, and then the sound goes off, and they don't quite get there. Little things like that.
Dude farts.
Right.
There's some. You know, you said you wanted to apply to everyone. Everyone's got a good fart gag in high school. You know, the height of comedy.
Sure. And that's the kind of stuff that does stick with me. But it's very. You know, few and far between. The other trouble is, well, the source material is written by a male who, and the story is told through the point of view of the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the themes that even Coppola mentioned this as well. One of the themes is loss, or the theme. Of course, she had her, father giving her advice. I don't want to say throughout the film. Process, but there's definitely all the behind the scenes. Like, you can see Francis Ford Coppola and her mom chiming in on things. And he says that anytime you need to make a decision about wardrobe, about music or whatever, go back to what the film is about. And Sofia Coppola has decided it's about loss and how the loss of these girls affects the boys. Which, again, when I heard her say that, I was like, well, then why is this about – why is this movie for young girls? I don't understand. So the book is about that through the point of view of the boys, but the movie isn't. It's kind of all over the place. You don't spend enough time with the boys. You don't spend enough time with the girls. I feel lost, much like the theme of this film. Where do you see yourself when it comes to that? Did you feel like you had enough time with the girls and enough time with the boys? I couldn't tell you any of them outside of Lux and the youngest one, who her first that initial suicide makes an impact.
I mean, I don't think I meant to understand the women in this film or women in general. I'm just gonna come to terms with that. And I'm fine with it. I could see it being frustrating because I think as a film goer, if you feel like you're not understanding any of the characters, except for maybe the boys who are hoping to sneak a peek of Kirsten Dunst, like making out with a dude, which is weird on its own because they're never like posited as like peeping Toms. It's like they want to peek at an experience that they don't think they'll ever have. Like, look what so that's what cool people do. Like, maybe one day I'll be able to kiss a girl. It's got this quaint sensibility to it, along obviously with the darkness, considering that, you know, from the jump, you know that these, how many girls are there? Five girls are going to commit suicide? Four or five. I mean, so no, I think it is at a remove, and I think, you know, watching Sofia Coppola's work afterwards, she kind of maintained that remove. What, you know, even in something like which you've only seen two of her films, but one I watched recently, On the Rocks with Rashida Jones and Bill Murray, which is the more broadly comedic version of like Lost in Translation. It's about a father and daughter sort of hanging out and reconnecting. And in that film, the daughter has kind of just come to terms with there's a lot about her father she'll never get, and she seems comfortable with it. So I think Miss Coppola is also comfortable with her characters never really having like a fully rounded view of someone else. She did mention that she liked the mysterious elements of the source material, and she really wanted to emphasize that. So mission accomplished. Even Trip, you know, your surrogate for high school representation, Webb on film, you know, he manages to have sex with the object of his desire, Lux, played by Kirsten Dunst. And they jump ahead years later. His character is being interviewed as a grown man, and he's like, I never had a love like that. And so you're expecting, like, he never quite got her, or he did get her and she, like, you know, snatched her love away in some way. She broke his heart. No, he has sex with her, gets up on this football field, and then just wanders home. And then, like, they cut to the teenage version and the adult, and it's like neither one, the younger version or the older, is like, I don't really know why I did that.
Right. Like,
that's the best damn woman I ever met, and I just couldn't stand to, like, look at her anymore. Just had to go home and walk it off.
He's in rehab for some reason. And even that entire sequence, I was like, why? We have not had a talking head, I think, throughout this film. Why now? Like, I guess you could chalk it up to, oh, how idiosyncratic. But I don't know. I feel like it's
cheating, because it's like, otherwise we really will be at a total loss as far as what the Josh Hartnett character. Like, I think you would read it, if you didn't have his adult comment, you would read it as, oh, what a cruel mm-hmm. bastard. This was his plan all along. But yeah. Instead, his version of it yeah. is just like, that he got too close to this mysterious woman and was scared of it for some reason. Like, I don't know. It's immature. It's an immature act, but it's a decidedly mature explanation, because most young men would be like, oh my God, I just had sex with Kirsten Dunst. I hope I get to do it again. I hope, like, they're just going to keep, like, the parents might intercede. Like, they may, you know, when she comes home late, she'll be banished from seeing him again. But not him removing himself from the situation and then never laying eyes on his, you know, the love of his life again. Very strange.
Very much so. You have sex and you get her home as soon as possible because you're trying to make sure this relationship continues. I have no idea. And, you know, we don't need the motivations of everybody. I think if we didn't have that talking head sequence, like the future Trip Fontaine, it would have probably worked just fine. As you're like, God damn, you don't know what he's thinking. Maybe he's just a bastard. Maybe he's scared. Who knows? But it throws into question all of it. It just makes even less sense. So, I don't know. I can't remember any of the other boys' names. I can't remember any of the other girls' names.
Well, in fairness, when Tripp says, I need three good men, three football players to go out with the other women. They even say, like, you know, who's going out with whom? And it's like, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, Lux is the main attraction. You two want to go, you know, you all want to go to the dance? Just pick one. And the boys don't seem to care. The girls, you know, the girls are using this as a means to, like, have some sense of freedom. I mean, the saddest part is, like, towards the end of the film, after Kathleen Turner has forced them to set fire to their rock albums, and then, you know, when that becomes a nuisance because of the smoke hazard, just sitting them out with the trash, the boys across the way don't even call to, like, chat up these girls. They just play records on the phone to communicate with them, which is yet another reason you should watch High Fidelity, because you should love someone who just communicates solely through pop culture and can't in any other way.
See, I was going to kind of rip the script a little bit more because of that. I was like, how lazy. Again, Nepo baby Sofia Coppola, she got her buddy, Brian Retzel, the drummer of Red Cross, like to help pick era appropriate music for the soundtrack. Like, don't we all wish we had these kinds of
You know, my biggest problem with that is that the homecoming dance sequence, the main song, is that you know, it's before our time, that Come Sail Away or whatever. That was also the main dance song used in the pilot episode of Freaks and Geeks, and I wondered which one came out first, because it's unfortunately for Miss Coppola, like, when that happens, I'm not watching these girls like have their probably one moment in the sun. I'm thinking, like, man, Freaks and Geeks was a fucking great show. I can't wait to break out that box. No, those are real teenagers. Those are people I understand.
My wife was so upset when she found out that that's it for Freaks and Geeks. Like, what do you mean that's it? I was like, nobody watched it. She's like, why not? These guys are such big stars. I'm like, they didn't watch Forgetting Sarah Marshall and then Freaks and Geeks.
Nope,
that didn't happen.
It ends
the other way.
James Franco learning how to play Dungeons and Dragons, and that's, you know, that's all I need, baby. I'm good with that.
Right. Now, I, you know, watching, I figured, digging into the special features of The Virgin Suicides would give me a better appreciation for what the film was trying to do, and it didn't. It just confounds me even more and makes me even angrier that Sofia Coppola has a career. You know, it was...
I have to jump in and say that I love Marie Antoinette. Like, that is that might be my favorite movie of that respective year, like 2006, 5, somewhere in there. I will grant you that, much like our discussion in the Rushmore episode, that it's perhaps peaked and gone. Like, I was bored to death with Priscilla that came out, because she, like Wes Anderson, sometimes that aesthetic, which Kirsten Dunst talks about a lot in the, I think, retrospective that's on the Criterion disc and channel, that she just, like, had her aesthetic from the jump. So I will give her that. You know, you Nepo baby all you want. Her look is decidedly different from her father's. The thing is, though, it's like she had that in Virgin Suicides, and that's it. That's like, we're going to keep this. We're going to keep that, the cool music that she has. I think she ended up marrying the lead singer of the band Phoenix. And you get similar style, kind of almost like European pop rock kind of sensibilities to all of her movies. Look, it works for Wes Anderson. I think Sofia Coppola, if you dig her style, I do think that at some point there does seem to be a little bit of style over substance, much like Wes Anderson. I'm not just going to attack the the lady directing here, but I do think her sensibility and her career arc is very similar to his.
I don't know.
You're siding with the man, huh? You're like, you ever made a cartoon? You ever made a stop motion animation there, Sofia?
I don't know, because I've only seen two films. This one was, I guess, less rooted in its references than Lost in Translation, where clearly she saw In the Mood for Love and was like, well, how do I say that I was inspired by this and not just rip it off? Stuff like that. Like, so I can't speak to her other work. But again, watching the behind-the-scenes stuff, Daddy, could you please buy me the rights to this book? You know, there's a whole lot of that. That over and over. Her mom at the end of one of the behind the scenes was like, I felt so bad, she was working so hard, I wanted her to go get some sleep.
I do want to say, since her mother just passed like 2 days ago, rest in peace, as Webb is doing a horrible, I assume horrible, impression.
I don't know. I think I went like a Jersey or a New York accent instead of like an Italian, which I assume she is. But no, obviously, you know, I'm playing the villain here and going into a little bit of a hyperbole, but it just it never felt like there was any real obstacles for her.
Okay. On that note, do you give her any credit that most of her work is about well-to-do people who don't usually have much in the way of obstacles? Now, Marie Antoinette is probably the most, you know, historical version of that, but even here, there's a moment in the film where it's the teenage boys left behind who basically have those questions left unanswered, that it irks them into adulthood, but they mention their parents, like, go back to playing tennis. Like, they have the weird gas mask sort of, like, ball that looks like something out of Eyes Wide Shut. So I do credit her that she seems aware of her upbringing and decided to sort of point the lens back at the people that she grew up with. That, you know, James Woods and Kathleen Turner might be, that might be the, as every man as it gets, for a Sofia Coppola joint, but it does seem like they're in a pretty well off neighborhood. If they just would have stopped having kids, you just don't have, you don't have five kids, especially if they're going to off themselves. Like, that was just a total waste of money.
I'll give her, yes, I'll give her that much. Like, I'm not saying the film is bad. Again, like, my hypothesis.
I love when you end that sentence, because this is not a blog post. We can hear you. And even when you say bad, you're like, it's like there's a parenthetical. But is it? It might be bad.
It's not for me. Most of my, you know, poking fun at the movie and at her, it is just, you know, me being a little bit of a troll here. It's a finely put together film. I have no idea who this is for. It's certainly not for me. I don't think it's as profound as she thinks it is. I mean, you know, the movie kind of opens with that scene with Danny DeVito asking, like, kid, you know, you're off on yourself. Or you haven't even had a chance to see how bad the rest of life can be. And her response is, well, doctor, you've never been a 13-year-old girl.
I'm like, that's a trailer moment. Right. That's definitely something, like, A24 would hang their hat on those lines. I mean, I think you're correct, but I also think that where it's from, you know, the boys across the street or the boys in the neighborhood or the girls, it has a very teenage perspective where everything that's happening is the biggest event that they've ever experienced.
Sure.
And I think that's accurate. It is very art house, but I think that broadly speaking does apply to the teenage mindset at large.
I'm gonna make the edit. I think you're right. Well, let's talk about Virgin Suicides in relation to our other films. Yes. Rushmore and Election. I actually think they form a very fascinating trilogy. They really do. Because let's take a look at our main characters. You've got Max, Tracy, and I guess Lux. I don't know who to give it to. You spend the most time with her. I think the movie is, at the end of the day, starring Kirsten Dunst. All three very fascinating adolescent, I don't want to call them protagonists, or they're not even anti-heroes, but they are our main focus. Now, none of them feel overly relatable, but they all have their moments for me. I mean, God help me, I think Max is probably my favorite of the three, and I find myself relating to him the most, especially spending time with Tracy and Lux. I'm like, oh, I guess
I would have had you as a Tracy Flick guy. You're all about aspiring to the best, especially in your education years.
Well,
I'm surprised by this. Max Fisher, not a great student at all.
How about this? I'm caught between Max and Tracy.
Not a surprise.
There was a lot.
Lux is the horse that goes lame that we shoot at the end of the race. And she's happy for it.
If I had the opportunity of getting frisky on rooftops in my youth, yes, I would do that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't even know where to begin to relate to Lux on any level outside of, well, you know what? Here we go. Hold on a second. While my parents weren't like Christian fanatics, they were very conservative Indian people, and they continue to be. So I couldn't go to these big dances, the homecomings and the proms. I didn't. In fact, I actually shut those, the idea of going to them out before I even had an opportunity to be like, oh, who would I want to go with? Or who would somebody, you know, who would want to go with me? That never even crossed my mind. In fact, instead of going to prom, I was hanging out with my buddy playing Time Crisis 3, you know? We hooked up the guns to the and the sensor.
Maybe
and
we would have been close buds in high school, because this actually came up last night. My wife was talking about her prom experiences. With our associate, Dave, podcast associate. And, you know, they were just trading stories. I think he said something to the effect of, like, you know, that's the, like this film, that's the biggest thing in the world, just getting someone to go to dance with, and how meaningless and trite it feels now. And then she, like, threw me under. I mean, like, two decades later, it's like, and here's a guy that didn't even go to prom. I went to see the auteur Todd Phillips Road Trip on one of my prom nights, and I was so fucking pumped about it. I was like, yeah, Tom Green, that's his feature film debut. I'm gonna love it. I had a great time. Priorities are different. I kind of wish that I had the dedication, the obsessive quality. That seems to be the common link with our three characters, right? Like, the difference is, I guess, that Lux in Virgin Suicides is the one being obsessed over, whereas Max and Tracy are obsessed with whatever their goals are, but they're very in tune with the politics of their school. I mean, Max even says Rushmore, you know, that's the thing he wants to keep doing for the rest of his life. He doesn't want to do it well, but he just wants to be there. I can't truck with that because I never had that sensibility, but I also don't think I was ever someone that knew what it was like for people to obsess over either. So I don't really have a common experience with any of these three, but I'm going to go with Lux because that's the only person that I saw. I knew a Lux in my teenage years. I knew who that person was that everyone sort of talked about and had their sort of antenna up and would build up, because most of the time your high school life is fairly boring. I think that's the one thing that's missing from this and the general sort of teenage experience is a lot of crazy shit happens. The fact that every one of these girls kills themselves is, you know, that's this house at the end of it is the beginning of like a Conjuring movie or something. There's so much like trauma and so many bad things that happen. That's what removes it from me. If there's no suicide in the Virgin Suicides, I would totally get this movie. I would get Lux. I would get those girls being at a remove from everyone else. Max Fisher, no. Tracy Flick, if there was a Tracy Flick around, I did not want to know them. So as far as my vote, as far as my high school experience, it unfortunately has to be the Virgin Suicides is the closest thing that I can sort of approximate to my, not to my life in particular, but what I've been witness to.
I think what I'll decide is Max is my ego, Tracy is my super ego, and Lux is my id. I think that's the best way that I can kind of put these three together.
You are going to be so hated by the end of this episode.
Now, despite everything that I've said, I think Sofia Coppola is a very nice and very dedicated daughter.
Rest in peace, Eleanor Coppola. I enjoyed Paris Can Wait with Diane Lane. That was a fine rom-com, which Webb will never watch.